Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Hello, I'm Mike McDowell.
And I'm Simone Carlos.
Welcome to Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe, the show that explores what it really takes to live, work and build a business in Spain.
Maybe you're a landscape gardener or you own a nail salon.
Maybe you fix cars or you sell beauty products.
No matter your situation, we're here to offer guidance to help you succeed.
And you never know, you might be inspired to make changes or even to appear on this show.
Do get in touch and let us know if you have a question about a particular aspect of starting or running a company in Spain. Don't be shy.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a stupid question. Don't be embarrassed. Send us an email. The address is simone@tre.radio. That's simone@tre.radio.
So right now, settle down and enjoy this latest edition of Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe.
Today we have two guests. The first is Irina Saltmarsh, who runs a business helping people navigate all of the most challenging aspects of moving to Spain.
Irina is Russian and lived all over the world, including in Switzerland and Tenerife, before settling in Andalusia.
Her company, Malaga Expat, guides people through every aspect of moving to the city of Malaga, from visas and residency permits to finding homes and understanding the local systems. She talks about her own voyage across continents, the challenges of relocating to a new country, and how she turned her experiences into a thriving business.
My name is Irina Saltmarsh. I am based in Malaga and I'm running Malaga Expat Consulting, a relocation agency helping people, individuals, families, couples relocate to the beautiful Malaga to settle here, to handle and tackle all the procedures starting from immigration like visas, residencies, admin stuff, to finding homes, enrolling children to school, and anything related to such a big event of moving to a new country.
So, Irina, I detect an accent. Whereabouts are you from originally?
I'm originally from Russia, but I left Russia 25 years ago, so I kind of don't anymore consider myself being Russian. The funny thing, I don't like have a real consideration like where do I belong. I've lived in various different countries, and now Spain is my home since more than 15 years, But I also cannot really say that I'm Spanish also, although I'm holding a Spanish passport.
Oh, you have Spanish citizenship, not just residency.
Yes, I do now have Spanish citizenship, correct.
Wow, okay. Well, that's quite impressive. And, well, I'll ask you later maybe how you go about doing that. I mean, do you feel, now that you're a citizen particularly, do you feel that you belong in Spain?
Well, yes and no. As I said, when you are not coming originally, when you haven't grown up here and it's not like, so to say, your homeland. It is your nationality, but it's not necessarily where you belong. But that's the funny thing is I also don't consider myself belong to Russia anymore either. So I kind of feel a bit of being a citizen of the world, living in various different countries and picked up lots of things mentality-wise from different countries kind of built my own personality and mentality not related to nationality, if you know what I mean.
I do, yeah. So Saltmarsh, that is neither a Russian nor a Spanish name.
Correct.
So I'm guessing that you're married to a British person.
It is a British name and it is my husband's name. He also is a huge mix of nationalities. His father was British and his mother was Dutch, and he was raised in Switzerland. So that's the country where he belongs to, so to say. And before we moved to Spain, we lived in Switzerland.
Okay, and is that where you met, in Switzerland?
Correct, yes, we met in Switzerland and we lived there for a few years before we decided to make Spain our new home.
So your husband could have lived in the UK, he could have lived in Holland, he could have continued to live in Switzerland. You've both had a lot of choices, but you've chosen Spain. So what is it about Spain that made you want to make it your home?
Well, initially, when we decided to move to Spain from Switzerland, we both worked in big multinational companies, running corporate careers, having a very stressful lifestyle business-wise. And we were looking for a more settled, quiet lifestyle with more focus on really lifestyle than running businesses doing career and so on. So that was part of the reason we wanted to move to Spain. And of course, we were looking for a nicer climate. Initially, we moved from Switzerland. Initially, we moved to the Canary Islands, to Tenerife. Main driver behind it was the climate. And that's where we lived for the first 7.5 years before we then decided to move to the mainland, to Malaga, where we are based now.
Did something happen? You know, did you come home from work one day and say to your husband, this has happened and I've had enough and we need to leave our step away from our corporate careers?
Well, yeah, actually it was my husband's idea. It was his he was main driver behind moving, and he had burnout. Yeah, that was actually the reason when we started thinking of looking at it from a different side. And that's not as important as initially thought of. And that's how we start. We went and do Spain on holidays a few times, and we really liked the lifestyle and the atmosphere and the mentality and the language and the climate. There were so many and the bits and pieces which appealed to us, and that all led to this decision of stepping away from the corporate careers and moving.
And Tenerife, you lived there for 7.5 years, but did you find it too isolated?
Yes, that was not the really right place for me personally. That didn't really work for me. I mean, it was my husband's idea again to move there, and actually he quite liked it there, but for me personally it didn't work. It was a bit too small and a bit too touristic and a bit lacking the let's say the culture, the possibility of traveling to, or the easiness of traveling within Europe. And just, yeah, lacking lots of things locally. So that didn't feel right for me. I didn't quite settle there.
When did you get your Spanish citizenship?
I got it when I moved to Malaga already. Well, to be able to get your Spanish citizenship through residency, you need to be a legal resident for 10 continuous years. After that, you can apply for your citizenship. Of course, there are a certain set of requirements. You need to pass the test, you need to pass the language test, the general knowledge test, and there's obviously a lot of administration work involved in that as well. I was very lucky, actually. I submitted my application and I got approved within several months, because usually the nationality takes quite some time. It's not unusual to wait for a decision for up to 2 years. But mine application, for whatever reason, I got lucky, so I was approved quite quickly.
Do you need to be able to speak Spanish extraordinarily well?
Well,
I know obviously you need to be able to speak it, but what sort of standard do you need?
You need to speak Spanish on the level of A2. Actually, it is not a very well, so to say, very high level of speaking. If you're a bit familiar with the language levels, A2 is just the second level. The initial level is A1, and A2 is just next to initial, so to say. So it is not a very, very high level expected. I think it's pretty much everyone can reach this level.
Well, you say that. Oh, I'm not sure even. I find myself in... 'cause if it felt like an exam, I must admit, I think I'd probably find myself tensing up and getting a little bit anxious about it all, and that would affect my... You know, if I walked into a shop or I bumped into one of my neighbours like I did about half an hour ago, I could have a conversation in Spanish and it'd be no problem at all. But in a that sort of academic situation, I'm not sure I would manage very well at all.
Well, yeah, you can go to school and take a few classes and get prepared specifically for this level. So that's it's not very difficult.
Yeah, you say that. your English is extremely good, and I would imagine, you know, you're being modest. You're probably an extremely talented linguist, whereas I am not.
Thank you.
But I will try it. I will try it at some point. What did you do for a living when you lived in Tenerife?
So, yeah, we came to Tenerife, and our idea was to, start from scratch, to do something that we've never done before. And to be honest with you, initially we wanted to open a bar, like the majority of people coming to Tenerife. But we very quickly realized that this is not something for us. And also, I also strongly believe you need to know what you are doing in order to be successful in it. So we kind of applied the knowledge that we already had, our, let's say, business acumen and business knowledge and business experience. And we started from scratch a business of real estate. But we were more focusing on selling ready-made businesses. So leaseholds of local businesses. The majority, of course, were within hospitality sector, like bars, restaurants, cafes, and so on. We were running an estate agency, which we started from complete scratch, from zero. And then 7.5 years later, we managed to sell it, actually quite successfully. So we built quite a respected business, which still operates in Tenerife. So it's now 15 years later, and I know that it is still being run under our name. So that's quite nice to know.
Have you had to develop techniques for reducing your clients' anxiety levels? I mean, have you come up with clever methods of calming people down, right. Just reassuring them that everything's going to be okay.
First of all, everybody is it's very individual, and all of us handle things differently. I see all type of clients, from super, super organized, over-organized, so to say, to those who like to do things in the last minute, which is, of course, not very helpful. My best way to calm people down is to talk to them regularly, to be in touch regularly, and to help them organize themselves. And also talk them through the procedures, because that's, I think, is the most scary part, when people kind of don't know, they are scared, they're afraid what they're going to be asked for. And if they know what is expecting them, also if they know that they will be accompanied and they will be joined for all these procedures, they feel much, much more secure and calm about it.
Where are your clients from?
My clients are from all over the world. It used to be a period that my main client was from the UK, from the United Kingdom, especially the period just before Brexit, when lots and lots, so there has been a huge wave of people, of course, coming and trying to legalize their situation. That was the main country. But since then, so it's since 2020, things have changed a lot. I at present have a real mix of nationalities and countries, from all over Europe, so even from the other European countries, European Union, like Germany, Poland, Holland, France, Italy. I have all over European Union. Going beyond is still United Kingdom, but recently a lot of American clients from the United States, a big wave of Americans moving to Spain, some Canadians as well. So really a very, very wild mix.
And has there been a big increase since COVID?
Yes, there've been a huge increase since COVID, and since that, since when Spain has introduced a new digital nomad visa. Not just Spain, several European countries have introduced digital nomad visa, which was also driven a lot by COVID.
There are a lot of Americans.
A lot of Americans.
I've noticed a lot more Americans now moving, well, to Mallorca, where I used to live, but here now also to the community of Valencia. And I think it is down to politics. I think it's down to Donald Trump,
yeah,
more or less. They've just decided they want to leave.
Yeah, unfortunately, yes.
So in Malaga, where are people moving to?
Where in Malaga, you mean?
Yeah, yes, exactly. Which neighborhoods or towns or villages in and around the city of Malaga are the most popular?
It is the actual city of Malaga, which is very, very popular. The majority of my clients move to and decide to settle in Malaga itself. But not only, there is the whole, of course, coastal area Costa del Sol area, so from Malaga till Marbella, this whole strip is popular as well, up to Estepona. Estepona has been discovered in the recent years and also especially very popular among Americans. However, I cover predominantly Malaga, so my position there is I'm a relocation agent who is specialized in Malaga. I know the local area. I can give people in kind of internal insights in the areas. And I do not do the, let's say, virtual relocation. So, like, I do not help people relocate to other parts of Spain or even across Costa del Sol. I cover the area only till Marbella. So I don't assist people's relocation to Estepona because I'm not familiar with the area. And I believe in the value of the local knowledge.
Do you ever find yourself regretting that you moved to Spain?
Oh, no. I personally never regret. I mean, let's be honest, there is no perfect place anywhere in the world. This just doesn't exist. Every place has its upsides and downsides, and I think the magic and the key to your happy living needs to be inside you, not in the place you're moving to. But Spain, I think, has so much positive to offer that it's really, I would find it very difficult to find reasons of regretting it.
And what do you personally, what do you love the most about living in Spain?
I love the people, the language, the attitude to, let's say, life and to each other, the priorities they put, like family is number one always, the priority, friends, the enjoying life, making the best out of it. And of course, climate is amazing, and it plays a huge role in our lives. Bringing up children here is much better than anywhere else. The attitude to children in general is very healthy and positive. The food, the culture, the beauty, it's a lot of things.
You obviously really love Spain. And what was it? Because you could have moved anywhere in Spain when you relocated from Tenerife. So what was it about Malaga that attracted you?
We went to Malaga. We came for a scouting trip to Malaga. And from the first moment when I came to Malaga, that was my very first visit to Malaga. I've never been to Malaga before. And from the first day I came to the city, it just felt right for me.
So how can people find you? People who want to relocate to Malaga, how do they find you?
Right, my website is www.malagaexpat.com, and I'm also on social media, on Instagram. I have an account, malaga.expat, and I'm also on Facebook as Malaga Expat Consulting page.
You are listening to Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe.
In part two of the show, I'll be chatting to Alejandro Hernandez.
And later in part three, we'll be running through an essential checklist of everything that you need to consider before launching a business in Spain.
Don't go away.
This is Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe, making sense of business in Spain. This is Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe with Mike McDowell and Simone Carlos.
This is Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe. I'm Simone Carlos.
And I'm Mike McDowell. And this is the programme which showcases English-speaking expat business owners in Spain.
Whether you install air conditioning or bake cookies, we'd like to hear from you.
It doesn't matter if you're a sole trader or if you have dozens of employees. We are genuinely interested in your story.
Send us an email. The address is simone@tre.radio.
Yeah, that's simone@tre.radio. We would love to hear from you.
Okay, our second guest today is someone quite different. His name is Alejandro Hernandez, and he is a musician who also happens to be a plumber.
Alejandro specializes in providing reliable plumbing services to foreigners living in Spain, and he speaks perfect English, which is a huge advantage when you're trying to explain what's wrong with somebody's bathroom, but also when you're doing a radio interview.
Originally from Madrid, Alejandro established his plumbing business in Valencia. Right now, he's doing a tremendous amount of work in El Cabañal, which has become one of the most popular neighborhoods for new arrivals in the city.
Alejandro has built a reputation for trustworthy service in a field where, let's be honest, trust is everything. A few days ago, Simone sat down with Alejandro to talk about building a business, about finding customers, and about what it's like being a tradesman who specifically serves the English-speaking expat community.
So I'm originally from Madrid, although I've been traveling quite a bit and I've lived in different countries. I'm currently working in two things. One is, and they're completely different. I am part-time plumber in the mornings with my partner. We have a company, and also in the afternoon, evening, and also other days, I work in the music industry as a A&R. A&R is basically the people who work for a record label. And we are in touch with music artists. We are the connection between the record label and the artist.
How come you're working in two so different jobs?
Yeah, so that's a great question, actually. Since I was a kid, I have been doing like manual works. I was kind of handy and doing some construction works with my father, you know. So that's kind of in me as my background. Like I'm the handy man in general. Like I'm the guy who neighbors call when they have to hang on the paintings or whatever they call me. So I'm kind of handy in that sense. And at the same time, I started making music when I was a kid, and I've been into music my whole life, basically as a music producer. I also play saxophone. So 6 years ago, I moved to Valencia, actually where I live right now, because I got a scholarship to study at Berklee School of Music. It's one of the most prestigious music schools in the world, and we're lucky to have one campus in Valencia, actually. So the main campus for Berklee is in Boston, in the US, but we have a campus in Valencia where people from all over the world come to study here, which is beautiful. And I managed to study music business here, a master in music business. So yeah, I got in the music business, as I mentioned, as an A&R. So that's for the music part. I don't know, like 2 years ago, I realized there's a funny thing that happens when you work in the music industry, that people say you shouldn't work in your passion, right? Like, because I used to love making music myself. Like, I'm a producer, I play saxophone. And it turns out when you work in the music industry and you work 8, 9 hours talking to music artists or in the music industry, the last thing you want to do is to stay yet more time in front of the computer making music, you know? So I kind of use it as a plan B, like, okay, I want to do some pure manual work, so I will have the brain energy to do music afterwards, which is kind of working because it helps a lot to do my actual manual work and then do something with your brain. It helps a lot. And at the same time, it's something that where I feel comfortable and I think I'm good at. I'm handy and I have, background. I studied plumbing. I studied Formación Profesional, which is like a professional course on plumbing. And at the same time, there's the AI threat, of course. Like many of our current jobs are probably gonna be replaced by artificial intelligence. So this was also a way to have like a plan B. Like many reasons, but most important is that I like it, I'm good at it. And I studied that like 2 years ago. I studied this course on plumbing, and I'm professionally certified for that, so I can do it
So, did you do this course in Valencia?
in Valencia. Yeah.
What made you choose that path?
First of all, I wanted to do some manual work, something related to construction, because at that I had been working in. And I talked to some friends who professionally worked in construction, and I checked what's the biggest demand. And then turns out currently is plumbers and electricians. I felt kind of scared of electricity. Like, I don't know, there's always the electricity fear, you know? So I felt like, okay, water seems like not that dangerous. I'm comfortable with that. So yeah, I chose that path mainly because of the demand. We're two people in the team. Our target is expats and digital nomads, basically foreign people living in Valencia and surroundings, because Well, there's a big demand for professional plumbers, not only plumbers, but electricians, like construction workers in general, that are professional, because it's sad but true that in Spain it is very hard. It is very easy to find a plumber. It is very hard to find a good one, and it is very hard to find a good one that won't cheat you on, not even cheat you, but that will be professional in a way that they will show up in time. They will finish the work when they say they will, price or charge whatever they said they were gonna charge, which I mean, I've been working in international environments a lot. I've worked for multinational companies working with, and I know for other European standards, if we're talking about people from the Netherlands or from, I know in Valencia there's a huge Dutch community, for example. If you take these standards, there's a big, big cultural difference, right? And it is very hard to the expat community to deal with local plumbers in a sense, because I mean, they go for almuerzo in the middle of the morning. They leave for this lunch that nobody but Valencianos understand. And there's a cultural, like a big cultural difference, right? So I try to mitigate that difference, and that's where my target is, right?
That's great, and it's absolutely relatable. Like, I recently had a case where I needed an electrician to come, and he came and checked and pulled the cable and said, "Oh, I'll be back. I just need to get a part," and then never came back.
It's a nightmare. It's a problem in Spain in general for these type of services. We have such a big demand that, people just don't care.
So, since our listeners are not only in Valencia, especially more in all over Spain, especially in the south of Spain, is there any advice you can give them what is important to pay attention to when they are looking to contract a plumber or electrician?
That is a great question. I would say first, you should have a close budget. Okay, this is what it's going to cost. I would always add a penalty clause for late delivery, or how do you say that? Like, you know what I mean? Like, if they take more than they said, they should compensate in some way. You should ask, and if the supplier, the vendor don't agree, that's a huge red flag, because all the serious people I work with, they're happy to have that clause. Don't never pay more than 50% in advance. I would say that those three things.
Absolutely. So, do you play instruments somewhere publicly or just for fun and at home?
When I came to Valencia, I joined one of these charangas. So, these marching bands that they play on the streets, especially during fallas, because I play saxophone, which is a brass instrument. It's easy. So yeah, I sometimes play in this charanga on the street, which is super fun, because you go walking on the street, you play the most ridiculous songs, but people love it, and it's fun.
So, you two set up this plumbing business. How easy or how difficult was it to set this up, and the whole process? How long did it take you?
I mean, that's yeah, provided that Spain is probably one of the worst countries on earth to start a business, it was tough. It's not easy. You need to start by paying a lot of fees for incorporation, a lot of fees for tasa de autónomo. Like, there's a whole tax ecosystem around it that makes it very, very difficult to be an entrepreneur here. Luckily, we run a business that has a high demand. Like, for example, we cannot work with super big construction companies. For example, we avoid it because their payment terms is 90 days, which is non-manageable for a company like us, and luckily we don't need it. But for some autonomous, for some self-employed people, I know it is very hard because if you get paid 90 days after you purchase all your materials and after you paid all your team, then it's very hard to maintain that, right?
Many thanks to Alejandro Hernandez.
And if you need a plumber in Valencia who speaks English and who won't let you down, Alejandro Hernandez is your man. Drop us a line if you want his details. Simone@tre.radio.
In part three, Mike and I will be going through a vital checklist of things you must consider before you even think about launching a business in Spain.
That's after this short break. Stay with us.
This is Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe, making Spanish business make sense. This is Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe with Mike McDowell and Simone Carlos.
Hello, I'm Mike McDowell.
And I'm Simone Carlos.
Welcome back to Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe, the show that explores what it really takes to build a business in Spain.
We are here to help you succeed.
Send us an email. The address is simone@tre.radio. Okay, now we are going to look at something absolutely fundamental. We've had quite a few emails from people with business ideas, people who really want to launch their own companies in Spain. And very often, it's clear that they are jumping the gun a bit. They're missing out a vital step or even a few steps.
That's right. Before you register your business, before you hire a gestor, before you even choose a name, there are critical questions you need to answer. So here is my essential checklist for anyone thinking about launching a business in Spain.
And this isn't just about paperwork and licenses. It's about making sure that your business idea is actually viable before you invest time, money, and energy into it.
Exactly. So let's start with the very first question you need to ask yourself. Who exactly are my customers going to be?
I mean, it sounds pretty obvious, but I suspect a lot of people don't actually think it through properly.
They really don't, Mike. I've seen so many businesses fail because the owner had a vague idea like tourists or expats without getting specific. You need to know exactly who you're selling to. Who is your target audience? Are they families with young children? Retired couples? Digital nomads? Each group has completely different needs and spending habits.
So you can't just say, oh, my cafe will serve everybody.
Well, you can say it, but it won't help you make smart decisions. If you know your typical customer is a retired British couple with disposable income, that affects everything, your prices, your opening hours, your menu, even your decor. If you're targeting young remote workers, you need fast Wi-Fi and good coffee, not afternoon tea and scones with jam and cream.
Fair point. So what's the next question we need to ask ourselves?
Where exactly will I find these customers? This is crucial in Spain because location is everything. A business that works beautifully in Marbella might fail completely in a small village in the mountains.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. Let's say you want to offer dog grooming services. In a wealthy coastal area with lots of expats who treat their pets like children, you might be booked solid. In a traditional Spanish farming town, people might think you're crazy for charging 30 euros to wash a dog. You need to know there's actually demand where you plan to operate.
And I suppose you also need to know where these customers actually are. I mean, physically, I mean.
Precisely. Are they concentrated in certain neighborhoods? Do they shop in particular areas? If you're opening a shop, can they easily park nearby? If you're offering a service, how far are you willing to travel to reach them?
Okay. What is next on the checklist?
This is a big one. What problem am I actually solving for these customers? Every successful business solves a problem. That problem might be, I'm hungry and need lunch. Or, my boiler's broken, or I'm bored and want entertainment. But there has to be a clear problem that people are willing to pay you to solve.
I would imagine that some people just fall in love with a business idea without thinking about whether anybody actually needs it.
This happens all the time. They think, I love baking, so I start a bakery, without asking if the area already has three excellent bakeries. Or they think, I teach English, without researching whether there's actually demand for another English teacher in their town.
So it's not enough to be good at something.
Not at all. You need to be good at something that people actually need and are willing to pay for. Which brings us to the next question. What will I charge? And will people actually pay it?
Pricing things seems really tricky to me.
It is, and it's where a lot of people go wrong. You need to research what competitors charge, but you also need to do the math. If you're offering a service, how many hours can you realistically work per week? If you're selling products, what are your costs? Can you make a profit at a price customers will accept?
And I suppose we've also got to take into account the fact that prices that work in other countries, like in your home country, might not work here in Spain.
Exactly right. The cost of living is generally lower here. So people's expectations about pricing are very different. But at the same time, if you're serving expats from Northern Europe, they might be used to paying more. You need to understand your market.
Okay, so what else should be on the checklist?
Who are my competitors and what are they doing right or wrong? You must research your competition thoroughly. Visit their businesses, check their websites, read their reviews. What are customers complaining about? That's where you'll find opportunities.
So competition isn't necessarily a bad thing, I suppose.
Not at all. If there are three successful plumbers in your areas, that tells you there's a demand for plumbing services. The question is, what can you offer that's different or better? Maybe you speak English and they don't. Maybe you're more reliable or cheaper or faster or more specialized.
So you've got to find your unique angle.
Exactly. Which leads to another crucial question. What makes my business different from the competition? This is your unique selling point. Maybe you're the only one offering a particular service. Maybe you have special expertise. Or maybe you offer better customer service or longer opening hours. You need something that makes customers choose you instead of somebody else.
And I suppose, you know, I'm cheaper isn't always the best answer.
It rarely is in the long term, Mike. Competing on price alone is almost always a race to the bottom. It's much better to compete on quality, reliability, expertise or service. People will pay more if they believe they're getting more value.
Okay, so what about the legal side of things? That needs to be on the checklist too.
That's essential too. You need to ask, am I legally allowed to do this in Spain? Some professions require specific qualifications or licenses. If you're a builder in the UK, you can't just start building in Spain without understanding Spanish building regulations. If you're a therapist or a healthcare professional, your qualifications might not be recognized here.
So obviously you need to do your homework, you know, before you invest anything.
Absolutely. And here's another practical question people forget. Do I have the right visa or residency status to run a business? If you're not an EU citizen, there are specific visa requirements for entrepreneurs. Even if you're already living here, your current visa might not permit you to be self-employed.
So actually that could turn out to be a nasty surprise.
It actually happens more often than you think. People assume that because they're legally resident, they can automatically start a business. That's not always the case.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so What about money? That's got to be on the checklist too.
Oh, absolutely. You need to ask, how much money will I need to start this business? And how much do I need to live on while the business gets established? This is very critical. Most businesses don't make a profit in the first year, sometimes not even in the first 2 years. Can you support yourself during that time?
So really, you need savings.
Either savings or another source of income, or a partner who's working. I've seen too many people launch a business with barely enough money to cover the first few months, and then they panic when customers are slower to arrive than they expected.
So how much should people budget? Is there a rule of thumb?
This varies enormously depending on the business, but as a general rule, I'd say you need enough money to cover your business costs and your personal living expenses for at least a year, preferably two. That might sound like a lot, but it gives you breathing room to build the business properly.
Okay, what about the skills side of things?
Great question, Mike. You need to ask yourself, do I have the skills to run this business, or do I need to learn or hire? Being good at the core activity isn't enough. If you're a brilliant chef, that doesn't mean you can run a restaurant. Running a business requires skills in marketing, accounting, customer service, time management, and often technical skills too.
So you need to be honest, I suppose, about your weaknesses.
Very honest. And then you need to either learn those skills, hire people who have them, or partner with someone whose strengths complement yours. You can't just ignore the parts of business you don't enjoy or don't understand.
All right, so what about time? How much time should people expect to invest in a new business?
That's crucial. Ask yourself, how many hours per week can I realistically work? And is that enough to make the business viable? A lot of people start a business thinking it'll give them more free time and flexibility. But in reality, especially in the early years, you often work far longer hours than you would in employed work.
Evenings, weekends.
Often, yes. And if you have family commitments, health issues, or other responsibilities, you need to factor that in. There's no point planning a business that requires 60 hours a week if you can only manage 30.
And I suppose you need to think about whether you actually want to work in this business day after day.
Absolutely. Ask yourself, will I still enjoy this in 5 years? Just because you love cooking doesn't mean you love running a restaurant with all the stress, early mornings, and difficult customers. Your hobby and your business are very different things.
What about the practical stuff, you know, like where you will actually work?
You need to ask, where will I operate from and can I afford it? Will you work from home, rent an office, or rent a commercial space? Each option has different costs and legal implications. Working from home is the cheapest, but it's not allowed for all types of businesses, and it requires discipline to separate work and personal life.
Yeah, also, you know, commercial rent in Spain can be really expensive.
It can be, especially in tourist areas or city centres. You need to factor in not just rent, but also utilities, insurance, and often a significant deposit. And remember, signing a commercial lease is a major commitment. They're usually for 5 years or more.
Okay, so what about technology?
Very important. Ask yourself, what technology and equipment do I need and can I afford it? This might be a computer and phone, or it might be specialized equipment costing thousands of euros. And don't forget ongoing costs like software subscriptions, website hosting, and equipment maintenance.
Okay, even if you've got all of these things that we've talked about already in place, presumably you also need to think about how you're going to market your business.
Absolutely. How will I attract my first customers? This is something people often leave until after they've launched, and then they wonder why nobody knows they exist. You need a plan. Will you use social media, local advertising, networking, word of mouth? Each approach takes time and often money.
Well, do you know what? Radio advertising is the best. Of course it is. I'm not just saying that. Euro for euro, local radio advertising delivers absolutely the best return on investment of any form of marketing anywhere in the world. Seriously, get in touch with TRE. Get them to write you the kind of jingle that sticks in people's minds, maybe even drives them crazy, but is very, very memorable. Right, okay. Simone, are there any other questions that people should ask themselves?
Yes, and here's another important one. What happens if this fails? I know that sounds negative, but you need to think about your exit strategy. If the business doesn't work out, you can afford to close it? Are you personally liable for debts? Do you have any backup plan?
I suppose it's better to think about it now than, you know, than when you're actually, you know, already in trouble.
Exactly. And finally, ask yourself, have I spoken to other business owners in Spain about their experiences? This is so valuable. Other expat entrepreneurs can tell you things you'd never learn from a guidebook. They can warn you about pitfalls, recommend good gestors and accountants, and give you realistic expectations.
So you should talk to people, what, in similar businesses?
Yes, but not just direct competitors. They might not be so helpful. Talk to people in related fields, people in the same neighborhood, people who've been through the process of setting up a business. Most people are surprisingly willing to share their experiences, especially if you approach them respectfully and maybe offer to buy them a coffee.
Okay, Simone, that's quite a comprehensive checklist.
It is, but these are just the fundamental questions to get you started. If you can honestly answer all these questions before you start, you'll be so much better prepared than most people who launch businesses. You'll know whether your idea is actually viable. You'll have realistic expectations and you'll have a much better chance of success.
What if you cannot answer some of these questions?
Then you've got more research to do before you invest any of your money. It's much better to discover a problem at this stage than 6 months after you've signed a lease or hired staff.
Okay, Simone, brilliant advice as always. I'm afraid that is all we've got time for this week. Everybody at home, thank you so much for listening.
Next week, we'll be talking to an expat couple who've launched a business and taken on a renovation project on the Costa Brava. Don't miss it. Talk to you soon. Adios.
Hasta luego.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels, and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints. Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
COTA just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your COTA fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with COTA. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.